For quite some time, actually beginning in 1963 up until 1997, if you were listening to the radio or watching the television, right in the middle of any program, you could get interrupted by the announcement that the station was going to test the emergency broadcasting system. Remember that? You would hear an annoyed sound, a really annoying sound. It was a test of the emergency broadcast system. It lasts 35 or 40 seconds. You'd hear this loud, annoying, high-pitched, obnoxious sound followed by this phrase. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. If this had been an actual emergency... Oh, that takes us back a few years, doesn't it? I wish in life there were warnings like that just before difficulties and problems and troubles T-bone us and come into our lives, don't you? But you know, life just doesn't work that way, does it? In fact, have you ever thought about the fact that every significant advancement in life involves a test? Every single one. Before you can go to college, you've got to pass the SAT. Before you get that college degree, you've got to pass unbelievable numbers of tests and final exams. Before you can get into medical school, you've got to take what is called the MCAT, the Medical College Admission Test. Before you can get into law school, you've got to take the LSAT, the Law School Admission Test. Before you get into the military, you've got to pass a physical test. We're studying in the book of James. What a wonderful book this is. The brother of our Lord wrote this book, and it's all about how faith works. The book of James is basically a series of tests that are designed not only to show how faith works, but to prove that faith, in fact, does work. As we learned last week, there's a difference between truth faith and false faith. Real faith and counterfeit faith, there's a difference in them. God knows whether or not a person's faith is real because, you see, God looks on the inside. The only way we can know whether or not faith is real is by looking on the outside. James begins to take certain situations that actually show up in real life, and he shows how a person who has real faith would respond in those situations or to those situations. Let me ask you a question. What would your faith look like on the outside if it was real on the inside? That probably explains why in this little short book there are 54 imperative verses telling us to do this or to do that. They're not suggestions. James says this is what you need to do. Because if your faith is real, then in certain situations, you will respond in certain ways. Because that is how faith works. James doesn't fool around. He gets right to the most difficult and toughest test of faith first, and that is the test of troubles. Wow. We could write a whole book on that, couldn't we? Well, God already has. It's called the book of James. And many other books in the Bible. But we're studying James right now. When life goes south and things go sour, anybody can claim to believe in God, to trust God, and to have faith in God when all is sunshine and no rain, right? It is all good and no pain then, right? We'll learn today that how you handle trouble will reveal whether your faith is living or dead, genuine or fake, real or counterfeit. If your faith is all talk and no walk, if you have a possession of faith, but not a profession of faith, inevitably the fires of trouble will burn it up. Let me say that again. If you have a profession of faith, but not a possession of faith, inevitably the fires of trouble will burn it up. I guess one of the main things I want you to see from today's message is this. God uses troubles to test our faith, to see whether or not it is real, and to toughen our faith if it is. He tells us how real faith works when the chips are down, when the times are tough, when life seems unfair, and when it appears that God has gone completely missing. Here's how faith works in times of trouble. If our faith is real, troubles will. Let me share three quick things with you about what it will do. Number one, if our faith is real, troubles will strengthen our faith. That's right. Strengthen our faith if your faith is real. The first half of verse 2 is going to take us a little while to work through because it gets, frankly, well, it sounds a little odd, maybe even a little crazy. Verse 2 of James 1 says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds." Now, the situation is not if we have trouble, but the situation is when we have trouble. I don't believe in palm reading and tarot cards and all those kinds of things. But I can tell every one of you listening today what your future is. Are you ready? Everybody listening right now is headed for trouble, and trouble is headed for you. Just as weeds grow in gardens and thorns grow on roses, troubles grow in the flower bed of life. This is true of everybody, whether you love God or not, whether you believe in God or not, whether you obey God or not, whether you ever worship God or not. Troubles are simply unavoidable, but they're also unpredictable. The NIV says that we face trials. You know, a better translation would be to fall into trials, because that is what the word literally means. It refers to a person who accidentally slips and falls. Now, we all know that is usually the way that trouble comes into each of our lives. Nobody gets up in the morning and says, I think I'll have a bad day today. It's not that we go looking for trouble. Primarily, trouble comes looking for us, right? Then James says, these troubles will be of many kinds. The word there literally means multicolored. Troubles come in all shapes and sizes and colors. It can be everything from bankruptcy to cancer to unemployment or divorce. It can be a physical trouble, a financial trouble, a marital trouble, a psychological trouble, or a spiritual trouble. The weird part is James says when these troubles come into our lives, wait for it. The weird part is, James says, consider it pure joy. What? Yeah, consider it pure joy. You know, quite frankly, you have to admit that James probably needs a dash of Oprah or a tablespoonful of Dr. Phil. But if we keep reading, we'll see that he doesn't. If we keep reading, we'll understand what he meant. There's a lot of things you'll never know or understand about a trial or a trouble that comes into your life. But there's one thing you can know for sure, and it is this. James says, because you know the testing of your faith develops perseverance. James 1 verse 3. The word for test there in verse 3 is a word that refers to a young bird that would test its wings. It means to prove whether or not something is real or whether or not something works. Now, we learned the most important lesson of the day right here. Trials and troubles test the toughness of our faith. Now, you may not know where trials are going to take place. You may not know why troubles come into your life. You certainly are not going to know when they're going to happen, but you can always know the what of those trials and troubles. Every trial, every trouble is a test that is made up of two questions. You need to remember that God is asking you these two questions every time you are T-boned by trouble. Question one, do you trust me or not? Question two, how much do you trust me? You see, folks, it is when you decide to trust God in the most unstable times that your faith is strengthened and your faith grows. Your faith develops the ability to persevere and not to quit. But there's another benefit James quickly mentions in the fourth verse. James says, perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature, complete, not lacking anything. Now, if you are a parent, you're going to get this. One of the goals that we must have for our children is their maturity, right? As much as we love our kids, we don't want them to remain children the rest of their lives, now do we? God has a goal for us, and it is also, that's right, maturity. Remember this, folks. God is in the faith-growing business. So, every trial, every trouble, every tribulation that comes into your life and my life is a test. Good times don't test our faith. Good days don't drive us to God. It's the bad times when our faith grows most. Faith grows the most in times when it's most difficult to exercise it. Because you see, faith is like a muscle. In order to grow it, it has to be stressed. It has to be stretched. And it has to be strengthened. So many times we want to avoid trials and escape trials when actually it is the trials that we need the most. I read a story about a young boy who discovered a cocoon in a tree. Now, he was watching that cocoon over several days. He saw what he'd been waiting for. You see, inside that filmy shell was a newly formed butterfly. Oh, he was struggling something terrible to get out. Now, thinking he was doing the butterfly a favor, the boy took his pocket knife to cut a hole in the cocoon. The butterfly fell out, but he didn't even try to fly because he couldn't. What that boy didn't know was that the struggle to escape was designed to strengthen the butterfly's muscle system so that when it did come out, it could fly. God knows it is the same with us. God knows it is when we fight through difficulty and struggle with trouble that our faith grows and matures. Friends, here's how faith works. When the troubles and the trials and the tribulations hit us broadside, we may stagger for a moment, but here is what real faith says. Real faith says, no matter what is happening to me, God is doing something in me. Now, what James says begins to make sense. When he says, consider it pure joy, the word consider means to think ahead or to think through what's happening. When you realize what God is doing through a trial or a trouble, and you put it in proper perspective, even though you may not feel joy, and probably you won't, you can at least consider it a joyful opportunity for God to do a new work in your life. That's what James is talking about. Faith is not based on feelings, it's based on what we know about God. Here's the key. If you value your comfort more than you do your character, if you value your feelings more than you value your faith, then trials and troubles and tribulations will only drive you away from God. If you value your character and your faith and your walk with God more than anything else in this world, more than any material or physical property of any kind or physical thing, then you'll be able to count troubles a joy because you know that it in fact grows your character. Does that make sense? Sure does to me. I'm not saying I enjoy it, but I realize what God is doing and I can find joy in that. So troubles, James tells us, strengthens our faith. But there's another thing that troubles does when our faith is real. It changes our focus. You know, something kind of strange happens as James is talking about how the test of troubles brings out the best of our faith. He then begins a seemingly, what would be called, disconnected talk about wisdom. That's the best way I can think of saying it. A disconnected talk about wisdom. He says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. Now, what in the world does trouble, trials, and tribulations have to do with wisdom? Where are you going, James? You ever ask that question when you're reading either the passage like this or somewhere else in the Bible? Where are you going with this? David, where are you going with this? Paul, where are you going with this? Luke? Think about it for a moment. The first question we always ask the moment something goes wrong in our lives, the first question we ask the moment we get crushed by some trouble is, you're right, why? Why is this happening to me? James says this is exactly why you need wisdom. You need the wisdom to understand how God uses the difficulties of life to test your faith and to toughen your faith. This is why you need more than just knowledge and intelligence, because wisdom is more than intelligence. Intelligence, knowledge, accumulation of facts. Wisdom is to know how to apply those facts. You can have a high IQ and yet not be wise. Did you know that? Albert Einstein, without the knowledge of God, is just a brilliant fool. Wisdom is not just common sense either. It's not just what country people used to call horse sense. Of course, you know what horse sense is. It is what keeps horses from betting on people. Amen? What you need when you are going through difficult times in your life, what I need when I'm going through difficult times in my life, is the ability to see life from God's point of view. And that's exactly what wisdom is. And that is why you need more wisdom than you can get from either education or experience. You will never understand just how badly you need wisdom until you grasp this truth. Wisdom, here it is, comes only from God. In Job 28 and verse 20, we read these words, "Where then does wisdom come from? Where does understanding dwell?" The answer is found three verses later, Job 28, verse 23. There we read, "God understands the way to it, and he alone knows where it dwells." Folks, when you're going through difficult times, and you ask God to give you the wisdom to see what's happening, from his point of view, then you can realize how real faith responds. Real faith doesn't first say, "Rescue me." No, real faith says, "Reveal to me what you're doing, God." Real faith doesn't ask, "Where is God?" Real faith asks, "What is God doing in me? And what is God saying to me? What does God want me to learn from this? And how do I apply this to my life?" Then James gives two practical examples of two types of people who need wisdom and how to handle difficult circumstances. He talks about people in poverty and people in prosperity. James 1:19, verse 9 through 11 says, "The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position, but the one who is rich should take pride in his low position, because he will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossoms falls, and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich man will fade away even while he goes about his business." There are two things I believe are very difficult to handle. One is poverty, and the other is plenty. On the one hand, you've got this person who's going through a tremendous trouble in his life, and he knows he's so poor he doesn't have the money to buy his way out of it. On the other hand, you've also got this man who is rich, but he is also going through the type of trouble that all the money in the world can't buy his way out of it either. So James points to this truth. His point is whether you have a lot or whether you're dealing with poverty, whether you have a lot or whether you have a little, whether you're dealing with poverty or prosperity, if you both are wise, you both will really have to say the same thing. And the same thing is this: I don't need money in this situation. What I really need is God. Incidentally, I am absolutely convinced that it is much easier to handle poverty than it is to handle prosperity. There's a preacher by the name of Elmer Towns. He's the founder of the Dean of School of Religion at Liberty University. He's written over 160 books, and he knows about the church. He knows about Christianity in America, maybe as much or more than any man in America today. And he was talking with a fellow preacher one time, and the brother asked him this question: "What's the biggest problem in the church in America today? What's the biggest problem we're facing today?" And without hesitation, Dr. Towns said to his fellow preacher, he said, "Our people have too much. They are too prosperous, and they have forgotten their need of God." Folks, I'm convinced it's harder to handle prosperity than poverty. Heard about an old man who won $1 million in a lottery, but he had a terrible heart condition. His family was afraid to tell him because they thought he would die. They called the pastor and asked him to go and to tell the man that he'd won $1 million in the lottery. The pastor drove up to the man's farm, and as he was sitting on the front porch, smoking his pipe, preacher walks up, sits down with him, have some small talk back and forth. And finally, the old man said, "Preacher, what are you doing here?" Preacher said, "Well, I just was driving by and I thought I would ask you a question." The old man said, "All right." Preacher said, "If somebody told you that you just won $1 million in the lottery, what would you do with it?" The old man said, "Well, that's easy, Pastor. I would give every dollar to the church." The pastor immediately fell over and died of a heart attack. Well, the point I'm trying to make is this: troubles have a way of changing our focus, don't they? Bad times drives us to God. They force us to come before him and say, "Lord, I can't handle this situation. I don't understand why it's happening to me. I need wisdom to see this from your point of view so that my faith will be strong. You're going to prove whether or not you really believe in God in the midst of troubles. It'll strengthen your faith. It'll change your focus. And finally, it blesses our future. James 1:12 says, "Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him." There is a tremendous, unbelievable, almost indescribable blessing that's awaiting at the end of life that has remained faithful and steadfast to the one who is believing and trusting God. No matter how difficult the times and troubles might have been, God says to every one of us, no matter how deep, how hard, how heartbreaking the trouble might be, if we will refuse to buckle under the circumstances, we keep believing in God, keep trusting God, obeying God, serving God, he says we'll receive the crown of life. Anybody who's ever been to school knows what it means to be tested. Have you ever thought about the fact that a test is really not designed to make you look bad, but it's designed to make you look good? If you've ever prepared for the test, when the test comes, you receive a reward in the form of a good grade. And you receive a reward in the form of advancing then to the next grade. You receive a reward in the form of a degree or an accomplishment, whatever it is you're, whatever endeavor you're going through. The truth is, in any test, there's always coming the time when the teacher says, "Put your pencil down, hand in your paper." Folks, there's only one purpose for the teacher taking your paper, and that's to grade you on whether or not you pass the test. There are so many tests that await us in life. Real faith says when everything comes up snake eyes, and when all that could be lost is lost, and everything that could go wrong does go wrong, when that happens in our lives, and we can still say, "I still trust you, Lord, and I love you, I'm going to worship you, I'm going to serve you no matter what," then we truly have a real faith. Well, most of you ladies, I'm sure, have a pearl necklace. Did you know that pearls are the product of pain? For some unknown reason, the shell of the oyster gets pierced and the alien substance, a grain of sand, slips inside. Immediately, the sensitive body of that oyster goes to work, releasing a healing fluid that otherwise would have remained dormant. That irritant is covered and the wound is healed by the pearl. No other jewel has so fascinating story. A pearl is a healed wound. One of the most precious jewels on earth, conceived through irritation, born in adversity, nursed by adjustments. No wounding, no irritation, no covering, no pearl. But if you have a wound and you're irritated, God will cover it. And not only that, but have you ever thought that God says at the entrance to the home that we will have one day are pearly gates? My, oh my. The people who go through those gates are the people who are wounded. They were bruised. They were battered. They were beaten. But they responded to every trial and trouble with a faith that would not quit. A faith that honored God. Is your faith the real deal today? If you ever wonder, the next time trouble hits you square in the face, when you weren't even looking, remember, this is a test. He would want me to remind you of that today. Until next Lord's Day, remember, keep looking to Jesus.